This is William Levy, April 8th, 1989, Borderline Psyche, tape 3. The other one was actually tape 2.
And he sees all these people writhing about on his lawn and jumping around, and everybody's going crazy, and he looks at God and he says, "What do I do?" And God says, "Don't worry. You have the strength that comes from knowing." That's a wonderful line to me. That when you, there's a strength in knowing, a tremendous strength in that. Yes?
Can I get to your borderline psychosis? You know, this is a kind of a hurtful thing to hear that you get your borderline. How do you define the psychosis? You're being pressured to think that you are psychotic. You know, like some people that are extremely creative, you know, might really be seen by a normal population to be psychotic. How can you really define
it? How do I define psychotic? Well, for me, psychotic is just being in the presence of the archetypes directly. So that I'm living in this world, in here. I'm seeing this stuff. I'm seeing these guys. I'm looking at the myths of mankind. What it's like, it's sort of like, you know how you might be in a mountain cabin at night, and there's a little bit of a moon, just a sliver of a moon out, and you've got a fire in the fireplace, and you look out your window, and you can see the forest there and all. And then you go and you throw a log in the fireplace and the fire burns much more brightly. And then you look at the window. What do you see? You see the reflection of your own room. You don't see the outside anymore. Well, that's like what being psychotic is. You're seeing that inside stuff. I've been psychotic. I kind of work at it sometimes. You know, like I gave an example of pushing myself on purpose to hallucinate. That's actually a good activity. I would encourage people to do that. It's an exercise to do that and come back, you know. It's a spiritual practice. That's not a bad thing.
Isn't bad.
I don't consider it bad. No.
How about the population in general?
Hey. I guess I'm not too worried about... I think I'm pretty convinced that the population in general would disapprove of me for a whole lot of reasons. Don't worry about that anymore. Yes?
You're not the first person I've heard say that you're seeing more and more borderline. And I come more from a developmental perspective than...
So you must be in very foreign territory today, then.
Well, technically foreign.
Oh, okay.
Having read mostly James Masterson on the subject and a little bit of Kohler, I've seen it as a developmental phenomenon based on what goes on around separation and individuation.
Yes.
So when I hear that there are more and more borderlines, my question is, what is going on in the lives of young children more and more that would be creating more and more borderlines?
What you're saying, what she says is that she sees the creation of borderlines as a developmental process caused by a certain defect in the way that their object relations were when they were 1 and 2 years of age. And in that there are more, she agrees that there are more borderlines now than there used to be. So have we changed our child rearing practices? What's going on there? course, I don't see it as developmental. I see it as genetic, that we're born that way, but we haven't changed our genetic processes any, and yet there seems to be more borderlines. I don't know how or why this is happening. I don't believe we've changed our child rearing any, and I don't believe the genes are changing that much. So I don't know why it's happening, but I know it's happening.
Is it a Jungian
genetic switch? Well, actually, it's Freudian as well, but that's Freud himself, not his interpreters. Object relations do not see it genetically. Object relations people see it developmentally, of course. There are Jungians who see it developmentally. I don't think Jung saw anything developmentally. He doesn't write a word about child rearing, you know. And so that's an answer to your question. What's happening here? I don't know. You know, about 2,000 years ago, evidence seems to point to the fact that consciousness developed. No, not to around 2000 BC, 4,000 years ago. Consciousness developed in man. As far as we can tell, Bronze Age man, if you look at their writings and their mythology and all, do not appear to be capable of the ordinary human consciousness that we just have every day, that modern man has all the time. And you can really see a difference in the literature, from the ancient literature to the modern literature. And the language is different. There's a whole bunch of stuff, and there's books written on it. But around that period of time, and it's just a few hundred years, man changed from being unconscious to being conscious. And nobody knows why. And it probably wasn't developmental in terms of child-rearing. And it probably wasn't exactly genetic, because genetic processes are slower than that. So your guess is as good as anybody's as to why that is. But it does certainly seem to me, and we're caught up in it, we're in the midst of changing times. Yes?
Well, you say 4,000 years, the Egyptians were long before that, and they were quite conscious of the archetypes.
The Egyptians had the archetypes in their religions, as did the Sumerians and all of the civilized people. Archetypes, according to Jung, the archetypes existed before man. You know, no. When I speak of consciousness, I speak of ordinary consciousness, being able to make a plan and then carry it out. Having an awareness, having this invisible theater in your mind where you can make up stories and play them out for yourself. Just ordinary consciousness, to be conscious of things, just everything. That was not always there. And as far as we can tell, Bronze Age man did not have that ability. Yes, Bruce?
Yes, well, I kind of have a hunch myself, I have a personal theory that's happening, because we live in times of rapid change, that simply a niche is available for a change of personalities, and so we begin to happen. And my thing is that it's a rethinking evolution, to make an analogy, physical evolution doesn't go along slowly and smoothly like we used to think. It goes along, something happens in the environment changes, and there's gaps. There's changes, big changes. And we don't know why, we can't really explain it.
So physical evolution does seem to happen in spurts.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. Well, then,
it's not really clear, it's really not for these gaps. Mm-hmm. And my analogy, if you look at that psychically, it seems even easier to accept these gaps happen in my mind, because we live in times of rapid change where flexibility is far more important than rigidity and constancy. We're able to plod along every day, do the same thing. Conditioning, you do that and die.
Well, borderline people are more flexible, generally. That's true. They have to be. You had something you wanted to bring to our attention. Is this the time?
Yeah, I think this would fit into the discussion right here. I'm going to go ahead and read it now.
Okay.
This is to I'm out of the library and got this lunch break here. Two paragraphs from this is from the Portable Jungers, the Transcendent Function by Jungers, written in 1916. And the judgments that kind of been apparent in here, they come from the traditional society that was at that time. Just put that in historic perspective. The first one just describes the transcendent function, and I skip a few paragraphs to describe. Just really, I think, what we're talking about today. There's nothing mysterious or metaphysical about the term transcendent function. It means a psychological function comparable in its way to a mathematical function of the same name, which is a function of real and imaginary numbers. The psychological transcendent function arises from the union of conscious and unconscious contents, where they're like bringing something imaginary into the real world. Let's skip this other paragraph, which I think addresses what we were just talking about. The definiteness and directness of the conscious mind are extremely important acquisitions which humanity bought at a very heavy sacrifice, and which in turn have rendered humanity the highest service. Without them, science, technology, and civilization would be impossible, for they all presuppose the reliable continuity and directedness of the conscious process. For the statesman, the doctor, and engineer, as well as the scientist, the laborer, these qualities are absolutely indispensable. We may say in general that social worthlessness, increases the degree these qualities are impaired by the unconscious. Great artists and others distinguished by creativeness are, of course, exceptions to the rule. The very advantage that such individuals enjoy consists precisely in the permeability of partition separating conscious and unconscious. But for those professions and social activities which require just this continuity and reliability, these exceptional human beings are, as a rule, low value. We live in a different time, you know?
We certainly are. We're living in changing times, and it would be really helpful if we knew what we were changing into, but we don't. My thinking is that the answer, a part of the answer lies with all of us kind of people, but this is one of the things that's changing. There are more of us, and there's got to be. This is the part now where we're going to try and figure it all out. This is heavy material, I think. As I listen to the things people had to say in the break, it was like the sense was that this is a lot of material to have to digest. I've been digesting it for a while because I've been kind of preparing for this talk for a couple of months in my head. It's been cooking. But you're getting it all at once. So there's a lot of striking ideas in here, and I guess there are. To me, it's sort of old. Most of it is sort of old hat, and I'm just touching the surface of things, but some of the stuff could easily be new for you, you know. The fact that I've been thinking about it a while can still be new and require some assimilating work. I think that the ideas are primarily positive rather than scary, though. The message I'm putting across here is that I really I really think this is a good thing, that this is for the best, and I don't believe I'm being Panglossian in my attitude about that. Okay, you've actually brought up a lot of things. I'm going to see if there are other people. I noticed that I did give the admonition that it's good to be quiet early in the talk, and I didn't mean for that to apply now. This is a time where it's okay to talk. Okay, I take away the admonition here, Carl.
I feel on and on in this area. I came here because I thought I might be a borderline, but I don't think anything wrong. I'd like to present you the corn cases.
Okay, proceed.
Please, Mark. And that's the...
By the way, I don't think you're borderline either.
Oh. No, no. I don't agree that it has a sort of evolutionary value. I see it as having a survival value. We live in a time where the unconscious has literally moved outdoors. It's all around us in the news and everywhere. And the borderline is, it seems to me, from what you've been saying, is particularly adept at dealing with this. And so it's only natural they would fall into this niche and proliferate. This is how I see it. But I don't necessarily see that as good. For a person who is not borderline, it looks like madness overtaking us. And you can look at it. I know I have to go on. But you can see this in the art world. There used to be discernible movements. And in the last, I'm a scholar, but in the last 40 or 50 years, it's chaos. The art world feels very much like a borderline convention. and the point I would like to make and the way I see it is that whereas I see they have a value, I don't see creation being the same thing as having holes leading to your unconscious. What I see happening with a lot of borderlines and what happens so much is that they're literally retailing the unconscious. Creation itself is much harder to do. And right now, borderlines are sort of leaving the rest of us behind because you can retail the unconscious very quickly. It sells very well because it has magic and power. But the problem is it's profane. By that I mean it requires no initiation. And you're leaving the rest of us behind because the world is confounding. It is very hard to come up with a metaphor to deal with our world. And what gets me excited, the reason I'm saying this, is because I see us selling lust instead of love. I see us retailing the unconscious instead of producing metaphors which will help us live together. And if you look at how borderlines get along together, I mean, listen to this talk, don't look so rosy. And so I'm not against borderlines, but I'm trying to present another point of view that perhaps this isn't the best of all possible worlds. Maybe it's the evolution.
Okay. I'm going to take the prerogative of commenting on your comment. Largely, I agree with it. As I said, I don't see you as borderline. I do see you as a highly creative poet. And I certainly agree that there is a tendency to commercialize the unconscious and that we are living in terribly chaotic times. I don't think that we're living in terribly chaotic times because there are a lot of borderlines. I think there are a lot of borderlines because we're living in terribly chaotic times. But nevertheless, we are. Sure, those people who are able to do that will prostitute what they pick up from the unconscious. but that's not the best way to do it. Just as when the Assyrians were among the first people to develop consciousness back in the Bronze Age, and what they did with their consciousness and their newfound ability to plan was develop war and cruelty to new heights. And that's something that can be done with consciousness. But that's probably not the best thing that can be done with it. And certainly you can commercialize Christmas. And that's something you can do if you have access and a lot of ready windows into the unconscious. And you're right. Borderlines don't have to work as hard as non-borderlines on their creativity. That's true. It just sort of comes. There it is. It's a free gift.
Well, that's my disagreement. It's that it isn't creative.
It's without the ego's input, it's not. It's just channeling. I agree. And the ego does have to work on it. And the borderline's creativity is no different than the non-borderline's creativity in that the ego has to work on it. The difference is you don't have the muse problem in between. You still have the ego and the creative stuff. What you don't have is the muse bringing it to you. But what would you, Carl, suggest as an alternative to the trivialization of the products of the unconscious? What would you tell borderlines to do with their stuff as they get it?
Well, I'm a Republican, and my personal persuasion is to do nothing. what I would say is that this is a natural process, and that's how it has to go. I'm just trying to put a little consciousness into it so that people, from my point of view, don't run away and think that they're high point of evolution. Am I making sense?
Yes.
I would like to clarify, I wasn't suggesting it was an evolutionary trend, but rather a response to environmental change, and I would make an analogy of the need. Not that it's a superior way of doing it.
So, look, I can be the devil's advocate, and I would say, well, what I'm reacting against is to the chaotic part of creation. Half of creation is destruction.
No, I think you're doing just fine. You're certainly helping keeping me honest. that's a task, you know. Shirley.
Experiences in seeing them and maybe thinking about them more. And part of the reason I say it is that I spent some time in China this summer, and one thing that was really striking to me was that in all of the temples and in public places, there were always portrayals of not just gods, but also the demons and the devils. And so all different aspects of the unconscious were depicted, and people were able to, you know, really see those and see what that is and, you know, be familiar with it, and that's just a part of life and is there to see. And I don't know if it's true, but I know that it is a fact that the crime rate is much lower in those countries for things like murder and sexual abuse. And I'm just wondering if that has something to do with it. But that's a little bit, I think
we'll probably have to minimize dialogue a bit because other people have their hands up too. Yes?
Well, this idea struck me just as a repugnant grade, and that we really live, and there was a book written, I think about 20 years ago, called The Narcissist.
Could you speak up a little?
Living in a culture that's becoming more rapidly narcissistic, that's the big deal, or a lot of it is the narcissistic disturbance. The me generation being very persona invested in what we have in our seeing ourselves as separate and having this persona that separates and guards us culturally. What can I get when they call the choice? And I'm thinking, upcropping of all this borderline people is probably antidotal in a way to a narcissistic culture. And we've got, I'm borderline to some degree or other, and I have a good, healthy dose of narcissism, as Phil was saying, that all borderlines do. But what I'm doing and working with it is I'm seeing my own narcissism, and I'm wondering if there are a lot of people who are narcissistic, if they're as likely to seek meaningful therapy as borderlines, if they're so, you know, if there's only that without the borderline shakiness. Anyway, just to be kind of a balancing thing, like we have like we usually, when one thing comes up, there's its opposite comes up too. So I'm sort of, it's kind of a complex concept, but I'm seeing that it might bring
about a balance within our culture. Okay. The generation doesn't, young people
coming up and saying,
"Who's me?" Does that
make sense?
There is even though we talk about the borderline as being narcissistic, that narcissism is different than the narcissism of the me generation, because we have less of a sense of who that me is. So that's a good point. Yes?
Something ran through my head also, an archetype came up before the break, and I was thinking of Billy Prigogine and his order out of chaos. And I think everyone probably remembers Prigogine for his dissipated structures, for what he did with that. And remember, Prigogine's the one that nature takes care of everything, and everybody mentions chaos, and that's the new physics today, chaos. So to make it real quick, Prigogine just put a substance in a petri dish and turned up the heat in the Bunsen burner, and as the heat got turned up, the substance left out of the dish and changed form and changed structure. So we have all the dissipated structures that this was no longer recognizable. It gave off heat, it gave off light. So that I think it's too judgmental to say that these borderlines that are coming now out of this new structure, I don't like to see them being judged as useless or that they're overdone. I don't think we know what's coming out of this new type that has presented itself en masse, that the old structure is breaking down, and that there is a new evolution coming out of it. And that's what I say, just as you say that when wood is burned, who's to say that the essence of the ashes, the heat and the light, that those are useless? And so in defense of borderline, I would like to say certainly this has its place somehow in this new.
It's here, so it must have some alchemical purpose.
It's place and purpose, mm-hmm, and not to be judgmental.
Somebody spoke of, reminded me of the story about the ugly duckling here, you know. We got to be careful not to get too inflated, but Carl will help us with that. And on the other hand, we're not really as ugly as it's sometimes said either, you know. It's sort of like the story of the ugly duckling, and many of us, I know I carry that around with me, and maybe it's not so bad, but the humility is an important thing, and it's real. Yes, Bruce.
Yeah, I say, I agree quite a bit with Carl, what he's saying, except that I think I hear you decline it happening. I don't think
borderlines don't have any control over it. I don't think anyone else does. It's simply, things are simply changing at this incredible rate. Things seem chaotic because no structure persists for long enough. It's not useful long enough to persist. You know, we don't learn how to use computers, so when we're coming into the workforce today, it's going to be too what?
Computers, by the time you learn it, it's obsolete.
That's right. it's obsolete. It's, you know, it's part of the old generation. And predicting where that's going to go in the future, you know, it's going up exponentially. If you're a steel worker in Gary, Indiana, and you're out of work, and you're still out of work because you're a steel worker, and that's your persona, literally steel itself or stuff. You know, you can change. That's going to, in a changing environment, then at least it uses the possibility to survive, as you said, survival value. Not necessarily evolution. I'm not sure evolution has the highest and best achievement pinnacle it's moving toward. It's simply adapting to the environment. Well, Jung would probably argue with that. But about wholesaling the unconscious, I did a retailing the unconscious, when we say, as a screenplay writer, you really can see that film, especially if you get down to things like you know, the slasher movies, which are, you know, just, they're real psychotic kind of stuff. Kids are watching, people are making money off of just putting the trash together, you know, just based on sheer gore. And that's really retailing that, the maniac and monsters of that world. You know, and I think that's, I don't think that's good. I don't believe that's good. It makes that somehow, it validates that.
As I'm listening to what's being said here, I'm thinking in terms of two slants that I gave in my talk that I want to correct, because I think the material here is kind of springing from them and trying to fill up those gaps. And the slants, one of the slants is the creating of a polarity, of a we and they, with a borderline and a non-borderline, and I want to take that back if I can. We're all struggling, and those of us who happen to be borderline are struggling in our way, and people who aren't quite as borderline or have other problems they're struggling with are struggling in their way, you know, and neither one is any better or any worse than the other. We're all stuck in the human condition and pretty much equal, just different flavors of it. So I want to take back that polarity. That's something that snuck out of my own narcissism and my own need to inflate myself. And either way, that doesn't work. It doesn't work to think of the borderlines as real junky and defective specimens that are incurable. And it doesn't work to think of them as the next evolutionary phase of mankind. I don't think either of those things work. One's as bad as the other. That's the whole thing. And I'd rather kind of pull back discussion from the evolution thing, but let's terminate that part, because that's baloney. And the part about the polarity and the us and them stuff, we're all in the same boat, and if it sinks, we're all going to drown. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, actually, that's kind of what I was addressing. Carl was saying, I feel in agreement with Carl. Probably have different problems, but you're right, too. And, you know, probably have different problems with it, you know, just being different people, but maybe personal types being different, too. Different aspects of it may be difficult. I think, you know, like Bill said, you know, that ego, what the ego does with it, that working with it, like that thing that's brought to therapy, which you're on, that concretizing of the unconscious material, that's what's valuable. Not just like you want to put a detail in the unconscious, allowing it over the gates, allowing the story to pull out. I don't think that helps anybody. At least of all the person. Mm-hmm.
Can we hear from some of the people who haven't said too much today? A little bit. I'd like to try and get some sense of where we all are at. Up here. We got our mouthpieces. Huh? Yeah, Lynn, I was going to ask you if you...
This is sort of shifting from where we've just been, but I was very struck by the comment that you made earlier towards the end of the book, when you said you didn't feel that it was so much a development, that word line wasn't so much a developmental process as a genetic process. And I know as speaking of, not from a theoretical base, but speaking from the base of being a woman and a mother, I felt a real conflict with that statement, because I feel like parenting has changed drastically in the last several years, and that we've seen different aspects of that as our society and our culture has changed. And I'm not making any value judgment about that, but I felt it was real important to underline that, that there has been a drastic change in the family structure and the way and the conditions that we as mothers relate to our children and are asked to relate to our children. And that goes all the way back to the birthing process, you know, not just the parenting process. So I just felt the need to speak to that.
I think that Lynn's making an important point. She told this to me at a little more length at the break, and I have a blind spot in dealing with external world things and real social phenomena, almost as if they don't exist and don't affect people. I tend to focus on the internal psyche as if that was all there was, and that is not true. There really is a real world too, and it really does affect people. And the family has changed drastically in the last 50 years. There's no question about that. And I'm glad you point that out and keep me honest. Yes?
Is there any evidence of predatory tendency within families for that personality type? When I look at my own family, I can certainly see it going back about four generations. And on the mother's side of the family.
I'm not aware of any studies on the hereditary qualities of the borderline character structure. There really aren't many studies on it. For instance, they'll study sociopathy, and they'll say that that's 3% of the has a prevalence of 3% of the population among males. And they come up with the same 3% for all of the character types except for borderline. For borderline, they say the evidence is that it's very common. But they're not doing much in the way of study. It's my impression that it's hereditary, but I see everything that's hereditary. So that's prejudice of mine. Yes?
I'm not sure if it's genetic or if it's passed on family patterns. I felt that I found a lot of truth in reading in Bowen Family Systems Theory about schizophrenia and how family interactions can be passed on from generation to generation just in the patterns of relationship.
Yeah, that happens.
An intersection there.
Schizophrenia, though, does seem to be genetic. There's some pretty good twin studies.
Yeah. Well, maybe a combination.
Yeah. But this, I don't know. We don't really know. One could do studies, but they haven't been done.
When you're talking about how to survive in the work settings,
yeah,
or also have relationships with borderline, you said some things like not to get into your driven compulsions or find yourself in a repetitive pattern and just stop it. And I was wondering if to just stop something, if you would see that, to be able to do that, is that evidence that either you've been graduated or that your persona has gotten stronger, your ego has gotten stronger? How do you see that ability to just stop?
How would I see the ability to just stop? Personally, it would be my impression that you have that ability right now, that you've always had it. The behavior fools us into thinking that we can't just stop, but you really can't just stop. It's sort of like, you know how anger is a funny emotion. Anger feels like you have to do something with it. Like hit somebody or say nasty words to somebody. It carries with it the feeling of anger has associated with it a requirement for some form of action. But the truth is that it really isn't necessary to do any action. All you really have to do is simply feel the anger. It's an illusion that you have to do action. For most people, it's a successful illusion. They fool us. But you really don't. And it's the same with this other stuff. You really don't have to do it. And you don't have to make any big changes or develop a new persona or get individuated in order to be able to do it. All you have to do is believe you can do it and do it. You just do it, that's all.
I was working with a borderline client that advocating that and affirming their ability to do that they don't have to go anywhere else to be able to.
They can just do it, yeah, if they believe you, you know. It really can be, try it, you'll see. It can be done. It's work. You have to think about it. The natural tendency is to act on the impulse that you're feeling. And it requires an effort to not act. Just as staying on a diet requires an effort. But you really can. You know, it's not I can't do it. You really can. And I mean, like I walked in the mall by Fred Meyer at lunch, and I walked by the fudge. And I kept on walking, and I didn't stop. Every part of me said, you should stop and get a free piece of that fudge. But I didn't. You really can say no to that stuff. Unfortunately, I don't say no to it often. It can be done. It does require will. But that's all. Just will. Yeah, Bruce.
Care to comment on, I think there's a relationship between the aware archetype and the borderline?
I'm glad you raised that. He asked the question, is there a relationship between the aware archetype and the borderline? I think they're the same thing. If you want to understand borderline psychology, before you read the Nathan Salent Schwartz book, Schwartz-Salent book, you should read Don Franz's book on the aware. But if you do read that, be sure and read Hillman's book on the aware afterwards, because von Franz sort of makes it seem like being heavily involved with the aware archetype, which all borderline narcissistic people are, is a little bit like having terminal cancer. So you need to read Hillman, who tells you it's really a good thing and it's okay, and it's a positive archetype. She gives all the facts, but she's very pessimistic about it. It's just like Kernberg, that stuff I read earlier, you know, about viewing other people as empty vessels to be drunk unless they're empty, in which case you have no interest in them. That's painful stuff. Who likes to hear it? It's also true stuff. And it's very negative, and Kernberg, who writes truth, he sees stuff as they are. He also is very pessimistic about it. Somehow these guys who see the truth, they also are very pessimistic. And von Franz sees the truth about borderline. She writes very clearly about it, but she's also very pessimistic.
Why are they pessimistic?
I don't know. She's a pessimistic person. I know her, and she is. Not terribly, but she has some of Jung's last visions, you know, in which are kind of apocalyptic. And her view of that is, gee, that's really too bad. You know, she says, I'd really rather not think about that. And so, I mean, she carries a lot of pessimism. Hillman's much more optimistic, but he's not as nowhere near as clear. And it's the same with Colbert, you know, he's very optimistic, and his ideas of therapy are really helpful, but he makes almost no sense at all when you try and read him. Kernberg is very clear, he makes a lot of sense, but he's hopeless.
Yeah. How
are you? P-U-E-R. It's the Latin word for boy.
For what?
Boy. B-O-Y. Child. Male child. Boy. It's the Peter Pan archetype. What von Franz does in her book, and it's very good, it's in two phases. The first phase analyzes the Little Prince, the French story, The Little Prince. And the second portion analyzes a German story, The City Without Space, which show two different kinds of Fouer psychology. And it's just the finest thing ever written on the subject. But very pessimistic. So. Thanks for bringing that up. Other questions, comments?
To restate that, you say that is the same archetype as a borderline personality.
Well, borderline personality isn't an archetype. No. But and the Pu-Erh is an archetype, okay? But there are personality types who seem to be very friendly with the Pu-Erh, with the boy, the young adolescent boy archetype. Borderline psychology, if you look at your average everyday borderline, they look somewhat like an adolescent who's still adolescent despite being 40 or 50 years old or whatever. There's that quality of diffusion of things, churning of many different pieces, and nobody, and that quest for identity, both sexual and personal, is all going on in adolescence, in all normal adolescence. Occupational quests. Those are the jobs of an adolescent, and borderlines keep on doing it. The Pu-Erh archetype is the archetype underneath the adolescent. It's a child. It's the archetype of the unformed, the changing, the developing. Okay? And the borderline type is very friendly with that archetype. That God is around a lot. And so if you read, so when you read von Franz, she describes, I wondered what that noise was. I didn't realize it was me scratching. I wasn't hallucinating a dog. That's the adolescent archetype. Somehow that fits. I'm not exactly sure how. And if you read Ron Franz, she'll tell you a lot about borderline psychology, you see. And she's just from the point of view of this archetype. Yeah. No. Okay. I laid a lot of stuff. Doesn't anyone have any de-stressing they want to do in terms of all the stuff I laid on you? Sort of feelings about the material. That kind of comment. Yeah.
I just have one comment on why the pessimism for this personality is that when I first started learning about, you know, the feeling I got was, is that all there is? You know, it seems like if you put it all together, there's there's more to an individual in life than there is to the selecting the parts to play at a given time.
Mm-hmm.
The end of the story is that the whole person would be more than the sum of all the parts. That's the sadness, though. You miss that total potential. Just a feeling.
The whole person is more than the sum of its parts. I couldn't argue with that. Okay, well,
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright CG Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.